Welcome to Lawmen, a podcast about local legends and obscure curiosities from days of yore. I'm Alistair Beckett King.
And I'm James Shakeshaft.
And in this episode, we have a true story, James, a true story featuring deputy law person Bethany Black.
Oh, yes.
Off of stand-up comedy / the telly.
Yeah. Maybe we've got new people listening. So to explain, we talk about folklore and then judge it out of five.
Via an arbitrary scoring system.
In various categories that, as you'll see, don't make much sense.
This is the true story of Grace Darling. Not to imply that the other stories weren't true.
Wait a minute.
James.
Yeah.
Come with me. I've got a guest law person for you.
Have you?
All right. Yep. Just follow me around through this narrow passageway.
Oh. Yep.
All right.
Oh, I've had to go sideways.
That's okay. Okay. Now, through that curtain. Right now, I'm spinning you around so you don't know where you are.
I feel ill.
That's natural.
This checkerboard floor and red velvet curtains are freaking me out somewhat.
I was about to say I'm removing your blindfold, but now I realise you've been peeking this whole time.
Yes.
Look in the corner of the room. The red room. Black Lodge, the Bethany Black Lodge that we have found ourselves in. It's Bethany Black.
Hello, Bethany Black.
Ole. yeah, hello. Hiya.
Welcome to the podcast, Bethany. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Better than either of you two, by the sounds of things.
Yeah, we both have quite bad colds today. You know, if this episode is bad, I don't want people to blame Bethany because...
Oh, I accept no responsibility.
Listeners will probably know Bethany from, I don't know if listeners have heard of the TV show Doctor Who, but it's kind of like a little niche thing that some people are into.
Doctor what?
They won't recognise my voice.
And you sound totally different in the podcast to how you sound in the show Doctor Who, where you play like a cyborg bodyguard character.
It's a cloned space warrior.
CS Dubs.
I was a cloned space marine. There are millions who all have my face with a different face tattoo with a different number in Japanese.
Are you like the Jango Fett of the Doctor Whoniverse?
Yeah, yeah, I am, yeah, yeah. And had 50% of the audience not absolutely detested the episode, I would be in it all the time. Unfortunately.
It's hardly your fault you were in the worst episode of Doctor Who, but that's not your fault.
Yeah, that's kind of, it's because one of my favourite things that happens every year on my birthday, because there's very few other Doctor Who actors who share my birthday. Various different Doctor Who sites and stuff go and share tweets going on, happy birthday to Bethany Black, who played 474 in Sleep No More. And all day on my birthday on Twitter, I just get thousands of people going, the episode was you ruined it.
And I go,
oh, thank you very much. This is such a lovely birthday message. I really hope you have a wonderful Christmas.
To be fair to that episode, all the other actors had a cold.
Yeah.
So that was probably the reason why it was.
Yeah, but they altered my voice. They pitched my voice incredibly low without telling me either. That was the other thing. They didn't say anything. They didn't say that's what they were going to do. And then I watched it and went,
They Dave Prowsed you.
They Dave Prowsed me, yeah. Although it was actually me, because I know for a fact it was me, because I had to go and sit in a little recording booth in Soho with Mark Gatiss for an entire afternoon.
Did they ply you with whiskey and cigs?
I kind of wish they'd tried, at the very least.
So I'd like to tell you the story, James, of the legend of Grace Darling. Grace Darling is herself a local legend, a true real-world heroine. From the mid-19th century. I'm genuinely stunned. Bethany is related to Grace Darling.
What?
Yeah, yeah. It's...
And also, you really look like Grace Darling.
I know, it's ridiculous, isn't it? If you go and have a quick look over on the Wikipedia page for Grace Darling.
Which I will now.
Yeah, go and have a look at the portrait that is on there.
Oh, yeah. Have you got a lampshade that you could put on your face?
Is she wearing a lampshade?
She appears to be wearing a lampshade in the picture I've found.
She's got a proper Victorian bonnet.
She does look like she's got a giant croissant on her head.
She is one of my ancestors.
What?
So I have brought you blood, James. We all know the power of blood.
Yeah.
We have a blood connection with this story.
What did she do?
I say we save it. I'm going to take you back to the beginning of the story.
Oh.
It's the 5th of September, 1838. We're in Hull.
Oh.
And Captain John Humble is about to set sail for Dundee on a steamer by the name of Forfarshire. Forfarshire. I don't know how to say it. Basically, it's the old name for Angus.
It's Forfarshire.
Is it Forfarshire? It's, to me, it sounds like you've stubbed your toe and you're trying not to swear.
Forfarshire. Right.
Forfarshire. His previous vessel was called the Iasman Nat Nax.
Attempting to speak Klingon after a few pints.
His previous vessel was actually called the Neptune, which might suggest that this is a guy who could not sink a ship like a master of the seas. Hold on to that expectation, James. There were 60 souls aboard a ship, and nobody ever says things like that if the journey ends up well. Among those were a Mrs. Dawson, who was a passenger in steerage. Most of them were not passengers, but she was. And according to Chambers' Miscellany, 1847, even before the vessel left Hull, so strong was her impression from indications on board that all was not right, that if her husband, who is a glassman, had come down to the packet in time, she would have returned with him on shore. There was a bad vibe about this vessel. It was only 2 years old.
Oh, right. No, it's a boat, not a child.
It's a steamer, but the boiler was already leaking when they left Hull. Now, I'm not an engineer, but they are supposed to do that.
No.
And it was starting small fires. We all enjoy a fire.
Yeah.
But on a boat, often not ideal.
No.
Well, you'd think on a boat, the water would put it out.
If you're on a boat with a leak, I suppose.
Yeah.
You want a certain amount of fire. The fire to be on the inside of the engine in general, I think, yeah. Rather than sort of spreading out.
Contained.
Into the
engine. Okay, yeah. All right. Yeah, you win.
So a lot of pushback on whether fires are bad, but okay.
Yeah.
The engine man, Alan Stewart, said it was fine, according to records.
See?
That man does not survive this story. I think it's really unfair that we trust this obviously Scottish engineer. Who said,
that's fine.
It's on fire, but it's only a couple of fires. We'll be fine. Of course he said that, bearing in mind he did not relay the story of what happened.
Did he say, it's fine, the water will put it out? Because in which I think
he's... She'll only be on fire for long. So they were on their way up to that. It's an accurate Scottish accent, if you're wondering, Americans or Scottish people.
It's less accurate than the visual. That's
Yeah, my face is more Scottish than the accent. So they sailed up the east coast of England, and they headed through the Fairway.
All the way up?
Not that far, no. They went between the mainland and the Farne Islands, which are just a short way south of Lindisfarne.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I hoped, on reading this, I was thinking, oh, so Farne must mean island. So it's like the Island Islands and Lindis Island. But that is not how it works. I think Farne might mean pilgrim. Because, the St. Cuthbert, all those lads, they were knocking around there for a good long while.
Hundreds and hundreds of years.
For thousands and hundreds of thousands of years. I have another theory about why they're called the Farne Islands, which is that like Vikings from Sweden came over and crashed into them. And we're like, Farne!
Farne! Yeah, that is a very thing. But also, in Sweden, they also have some islands. Like, there's an island called Ur.
Very surprising island.
Yeah, That's how you pronounce the O with the two dots above it.
No, sorry. I've made it too long.
And that is one of the Swedish words for island as well. So they do have an island.
Mm. That's cool.
I think they also call Iceland island as well.
Oh.
So is Iceland a typo?
I thought you spoke a little bit of Swedish, so I thought you'd be able to help me.
Fan.
I know it from Scandinoirs, where they are swearing.
Yeah.
But I think it just literally means devil.
Yeah, it kind of does.
Which is so Victorian to be like, devil take these terrorists. So this journey's going fine. The Farne Islands are several small islands not far off the coast, but there's a narrow gap that you can easily pass through if there's, for instance, not a storm brewing.
I don't like how this is heading.
A storm was brewing. They got about as far as Berwick-upon-Tweed. And the engines packed up. That was when Alan Stewart reported that it was, in fact, not fine and that the engines didn't work.
Hey, but at least they were near Berwick-upon-Tweed, where they could get some of the Berwick cockles that they sell around there.
Yeah, Berwick-upon-Tweed's quite nice.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
If you're going from London to Edinburgh for the Fringe, that's all. Going through Durham's lovely and going through Berwick-upon-Tweed, there's some beautiful coastlines there.
Yeah, honestly, if I'm about to, if I'm on a ship that's about to break down, I'd much rather it break down in Berwick-upon-Tweed than Wall's End, for example.
Well, absolutely. But on the other hand, with Berwick-upon-Tweed, there's the ambiguity of, am I going to drown in Scotland or England?
It's why whenever I get on an aeroplane and I go to my seat and somebody's there with their partner, they go, oh, we didn't get put together, but we'd like to sit together. Do you mind swapping seats? I go, I'd rather not, because if we crash, they might think you're my body. And they always move. It's great.
Both of them.
Yeah, both of them. They go and try and find somewhere else to sit entirely. It's always great.
Sometimes on a different aeroplane.
Yeah.
So things are going really, really badly on the Forfarshire. Mm-hmm. The engines are given out and a storm is raging and they're worried they're about to be blown into the rocks. So what they do is turn about, unfurling the sails. The wind is coming down from the north and they sail back in the direction they just came, trying to steer away from the rocks.
Cool.
It seems like a reasonable thing to do. The idea is to sail back through the fairway, but the helm loses control of the vessel and the Forfarshire founders on the Farne Islands.
Because he was reversing. Did he have his arm over the seat?
Just one arm.
Like a dad.
Can all 60 people get their heads down, please? Yes.
All 60 souls, get your heads down.
Why are you calling us souls? Oh, no reason.
No reason. Is everyone in their allocated seats? No reason.
9 people manage to hop into a boat and get away after it's hit the rocks. But not long afterwards, a great wave comes along. It's dashed to pieces on the rocks and the entire ship breaks in two.
Oh.
The back end of the ship. I'm sure there's a nautical name for it. I don't know what that is.
Stern.
The stern.
The stern. And most of the rest of the ship is swept away by a current called the Pfeffergut. That's a very difficult word to Google. Is it a typo in the 19th century text I read? Maybe. I don't know how to describe it. 43 people drowned.
Oh.
But 9 survivors were left clinging to the fore part of the boat on the rocks of the Farne Islands. And the next morning, the inhabitants of Longstone Lighthouse, a mile away at the outermost point of the Farne Islands, spotted the survivors of the wreck. The inhabitants of Longstone Lighthouse were Grace Darling and her dad.
Oh.
What are they going to do, James? The storm's still raging.
I'd live tweet it.
But 9 people are out there crying for help. According to the stories, you could hear their cries, which is an obvious lie because a storm was happening and it was a mile away. So they could see them through a telescope. What would you do, James?
I'd sort of look around at my neighbours and hope they would do something, probably for a bit.
You're on the Farne Islands here. There's nobody else there. These are very small islands. There's nobody around. It's just Grace Darling and Daddy Darling.
Yeah, what would you do?
I hope that you would deal with it.
Yes. Yeah. By asking the question first, you've put the onus on me to do something about these floundered people?
Foundered.
Foundered.
Floundering is like...
when you're in the water.
Yeah, foundering is crashed into rocks.
Right.
Bethany, would you like to tell us what Grace Darling did?
I would do exactly what Grace did, which is she went and she got a boat. And she rowed out in the storm and she rescued
a woman in the mid-19th century.
Yeah, she went and put on some oilskins. She jumped in a boat and she rowed. She rowed as far as her little arms would take her.
During a storm?
In a storm at 7 o'clock in the morning before she'd even had her breakfast.
I haven't made a cup of tea at that time.
2 hours after she'd noticed. Because that's my favourite part of the story. And I don't know if this is the correct time to go and bring this up, but apparently, because the boat hit the rocks at like 4:45 in the morning, and she heard a loud crash and had a look out the window and saw the flames and went, "Oh, flames, let's go and get the telescope." Got the telescope, had a look and went, "Oh yeah, there's definitely flames. Is there anyone still around? I can't see." Give it a couple of hours till the sun comes up and then left it.
So she went back to bed. So I was right.
Basically, yes. She did exactly what you did and went, "Oh yeah, I'll go back to bed." And then when the light came up, she went, "Oh no, now there are people out there. We should probably go and get them."
So normally her brothers would have been present and would have manned a rescue boat, but they weren't there.
Where were they?
I don't know.
In bed?
They were possibly off at some lighthouse maintenance convention. Yeah. how to make sure that your light stays on throughout the night.
It's probably like a team building weekend.
Yeah, to make sure that your light's on overnight to stop people from crashing into rocks a mile away from your lighthouse that is specifically designed to stop that from happening. I don't know.
To be fair, they were nearer to the other lighthouse on the Farne Islands. There's two lighthouses on the Farne Islands. Yeah.
That sounds confusing.
Actually, I don't know why the people at the Inner Farne Lighthouse didn't do anything about it. I'm probably going to find out that it wasn't built then, but still don't know. So she and her dad hopped in a boat. She rowed a tiny little, I think they call it a skiff, and he hopped onto the rocks to bring people back to safety. And at this point, every account, every sort of sober 19th century account of it starts using exclamation marks. Because they're so absolutely just brimming with amazement that a woman could do something like this. Here's what Chambers's miscellany has to say. "To have braved the perils of that terrible passage then would have done the highest honour to the well-tried nerves of even the stoutest of the male sex. But what shall be said of the errand of mercy being undertaken and accomplished mainly through the strength of a female heart and arm? although I think she used both arms. If she did it one-armed.
One arm and one heart on the other one.
That's showboating.
It's literally showboating.
She's just texting with the other one, being like, yeah, yeah, there's nine of them. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, I thought it was just a fire, but there's nine of them in the end.
51 souls gone so far.
Through the dim mist, with the aid of the glass, the figures of the sufferers were seen clinging to the wreck, but who could dare to tempt the raging abyss that intervened in the hope of succouring them? Mr. Darling, it is said, shrank from the attempt. Not so his daughter. At her solicitation, the boat was launched with the assistance of her mother, and father and daughter entered it, each taking an oar. It's worthy of being noted that Grace never had occasion to assist in the boat previous to the wreck of the Four Fasha, others of the family being always at hand. Now, that bit about her dad not wanting to do it, I think, is the beginning of the myth of Grace Darling being created. Because this story, as soon as this happened, I mean, they saved nine people's lives.
Yeah.
So that's a huge deal. Hmm. But it immediately becomes like, she's like Princess Diana and Captain Tom combined for the mid-19th century mind.
Yeah.
They are in love with her. And every retelling of the story makes her more heroic and her dad needlessly cowardly, I think.
She had an English heart.
Grace had an English heart. The raging sea she braved. Help, help, murder, something about the crew. So there's a song. I've just discovered that my software can do auto-tune, so we should be fine with all of that.
Wicked.
Doubt you'll need it.
It's just going to sound like Cher was singing.
It's in his skiff.
Do you believe in life after sea accidents?
2 hours after sea accidents.
Yes, I do, Grace Darling.
Only for 20% of the people.
I mean, the numbers aren't great. But by the time she got involved, the survival rate is pretty decent once Darling's on the case.
Yeah, absolutely. After a 2-hour nap.
G.W.M. Reynolds wrote, "The heroine of the Fern Islands," which... doesn't have the correct name for the islands, for one thing, because they're the Farne Islands, but he calls them the Fern Islands. He wrote that in 1839, and this book absolutely blows my mind. It's called The Heroine of the Fern Islands. Grace Darling doesn't appear until about chapter 9. It's a massive sort of romance. Chapter 1 begins in London, where the Honourable Mr. Slapman Twill is finishing his dinner.
What?
We're quickly introduced to Lord Mizzlekitty, Mr. and Mrs. Moses, and Captain Smashall.
No.
Who is a policeman.
Wonderful.
And at this point, you realise that he's just making it up. These are just like characters from the music hall. He's just creating a narrative around it.
He's read Dickens and just gone,
exactly.
All right. These names are on the nose, but...
Other characters include Lord Bilkamall, Mr. Snugs, Mr. Sillyman, which is pushing it, Mr. Sneaks, Mr. Twollop, Mr. Jacob Snatch, Mr. and Mrs. Holyboy, Harlequin Dick, and Limping Joe. Harlequin Dick and Limping Joe are two separate people rather than two stages of the same condition progressing. So the book is complete nonsense, but this is the very popular version of the story that gets out, in which she's a pure-hearted hero, and she died of consumption 4 years after this happened. So she's sort of the perfect
rock and roll way to go as well.
Yeah, exactly. One big smash.
It is. She's a rock star. Yeah. She's like, unfortunately, a couple of months short of her 27th birthday, so it doesn't quite get into the 27 club. But full on consumption, drinking brandies, opium.
And it's perfect for the fans because she never has to change. She never has to be a real person. She gets to become the icon of a perfect, sort of pure, noble-hearted English maid.
What is consumption?
Tuberculosis.
Yeah, tuberculosis.
Oh, not drinking too much or something.
No. No, but basically the treatment for it at the time was to drink whiskey or brandy.
Consuming things.
And opium. It was those are the two things.
The treatment for it at the time was to die.
Yeah, kind of. It was to try and just take the edge off it. Like Doc Holliday famously had it and drank like a quart of whiskey a day. Lie in bed drinking brandy and smoking opium.
If they found that you had TB, they put you on a chaise longue and then slid you into a Russian novel.
Yeah, kind of.
And your job would be to sit in the corner being sarcastic. While everyone else enjoyed themselves.
But she also like spent the rest of her life after this desperately trying not to be famous anymore, which I really relate to.
I was going to say, you've had some experience with fandom, haven't you?
Oh yeah, just a little bit. It's that whole thing of like, because I've spent 20 years becoming a really good stand-up comic.
Which is how long it takes, listener. Some people think it takes less than that. It doesn't.
Yeah. And I'm sort of about 15 years in, I started getting some telly and I had like a bunch of things that could have, if I'd had a slightly better personality and more ability to be able to go and take full advantage of it. It could have gone and led on to becoming incredibly famous. And part of that was a choice, and part of that was someone else's choice. But yeah, I've been close enough to it to go, oh, that's not for me.
But like the merch for this person, James, artists painted her, you could buy cups. It really was like, you know, Princess Di level of tat.
Wow.
There was a song, a version of which you heard me, I don't want to use the word sing. The good thing is, normally when I sing, James talks over me, but now we're recording remotely. That won't ruin my track, so I can still use it in the edit. There's nothing you can do.
You can still release it.
Grace had an English heart, just to be safe. A little.
What nationality heart did her dad have then?
A cowardly Welsh heart, maybe, or a snivelling French heart.
Almost certainly.
There was a panorama. Robert Watson made a moving panorama of it, and I didn't know what this was. It's like a really, really long painting on rolls, a bit like sort of like credits for an old TV show.
Mm.
And so people would sit and watch as the whole story, like the Bayeux tapestry, sort of rolled past them with sound effects. Oh. So it was shown four times a day in London's Egyptian Hall, which is a building that burned down, but was an amazing Egyptian-esque building for exhibitions and magic shows.
Wow.
I'd love to look at that. I'd love to go and sit and watch the panorama and just play the music to Some Mothers Do Have Them.
So this is how Grace Darling and Her Times by Constance Smedley described the panorama. The curtain rose upon a representation of the sea in motion, accompanied by the pattering of hail and rain. The man of war and a frigate with all its sails set appeared, and all the incidents of the awful terrors of a storm at sea were graphically depicted. A merchant vessel came into view, her foremast shattered by the lightning, while those on board fired guns. I don't know why they would do that.
They're trying to shoot the rain.
They tried to shoot they were trying to shoot the fire back into the engine.
I mean, that's just science.
Well, I suppose if you got it just right, you could maybe plug the hole up with a bullet if it stopped just at the right. It's going to jam in there.
Just hoping you can shoot some more lightning out in the sky. If it hits the bullet on its way up, that's going to stop it from striking the ship.
Yeah, it's metal, so it would attract the lightning, and you just...
Yeah. Mm.
That's good science, Bethany, actually.
Yeah.
This is going to blow your mind, James. Queen Victoria gave her 50 quid. Yep, Queen Victoria gave her 50 quid. And I like to imagine in a handshake.
Yeah. You know, like... Oh, yeah, like when you've done a gig for someone, and they go... Yeah. And they look over their shoulder and they go, all right, yeah, well done, yeah.
I remember my dad's mate, Dosh.
Yeah.
Who were at a pub, I think, in Gorton.
Yeah.
We had to sit outside the pub in the car while my dad went in.
Literally everything I know about you makes this story sound bizarre that your dad has a mate called Dosh. I'm like,
my dad's from Gorton in Manchester. I may be a pre-Raphaelite princeling in an ivory tower, but other people have suffered, and I've heard about it. And Dosh, he sort of shook hands with us and he gave me a fiver. Which in the 90s, is less like being given 50 quid by Queen Victoria. That's not bad.
Oh, that's a decent.
Yeah.
How many people had you saved?
Hardly any. Few. Very, very few.
And if you had done, someone called Dosh in a pub in Gorton is very unlikely to slip you a fiver for it. It's usually quite the opposite.
Was he called Dosh because that was his thing, giving out money?
I don't know, but I've always remembered that his nickname was Dosh because I got a fiver out of him. Which is also why Queen Victoria's nickname was Dosh.
Yeah.
Flash Vicky.
Well, it's also that thing of like both her and Grace Darling were probably on quite a lot of drugs at that point.
Mm. Yep.
Because Queen Victoria, super into cannabis. She had she took it for menstrual cramps, but she was like the first sort of CBD influencer. but she was also like, in terms of that, like she was the first person in the UK to have anesthesia for childbirth, which up until that point, all the newspapers had debunked as Yankee quackery. And the Catholic Church was furious about it. Going, no, obviously the Queen Victoria wasn't a Catholic, but it's...
Yeah, because kids are supposed to be brought forth in pain.
Because that's part of it, That's
part of the deal.
Part of the deal. You can't go getting knocked out and coming around afterwards having felt nothing.
Can if you're Queen Victoria.
I think that's probably one of those things I learned a long time ago that's almost certainly going to be been debunked when this comes out.
I can't believe Queen Victoria was a stoner.
Yeah, yeah.
on YouTube just watching Jordan Peterson videos going, yeah, actually, that's a really good point.
Yeah, she was... I think she was more the Joe Rogan of her day. She sat there, she's doing a little podcast. She goes, oh, next person, Grace Darling. So, tell me, Grace, what happened? And at the end of it, she bunged her 50 quid. I don't know anything about anything.
Queen Victoria's Patreon, she's going to be getting so much more than that. That's outrageous.
She's got all the numbers published. She's getting at least 12 grand a month. So that's...
So I'm imagining her and Grace like nipping to the bogs and doing fat lines of K. they've done it with 50s because you would if you're the queen.
Yeah, obviously.
And then she's... And Queen Victoria's like, keep it. Keep it. I've got loads more. I've literally got a license to print it, mate. Yeah, let's have a big old bifter.
Canonically, I reckon that's absolutely what happened. Yeah.
Is it treason or slander?
You can't slander the dead.
So it's treason.
It's treason. Yes, it's treason. On the subject of lying about dead people.
Oh, go on.
Oh, yeah, go on.
I was going to say friend of the podcast, enemy of the podcast, Derek Acora appears next. So there's a lot of lighthouses in this area. So we've got Huff Hill Lighthouse, Guile Point Lighthouse, Inner Farn Lighthouse, and Longstone Lighthouse, which is where Grace Darling lived. Those are all, because there's so many islands, these are all within a couple of miles of each other. Or to use the nautical term, couple of miles of each other.
don't know what
nautical knots. Couple of knots of each other.
Oh, but they're probably within a nautical mile of each other because nautical miles are huge comparatively.
Are they?
Yeah.
Why? Because they keep washing away.
Because the rulers float. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really difficult to keep the markers in place.
You tried to use a trundle wheel on the sea, James. You've been there for weeks. He's still trundling this.
I can still see the bubbles where he's trundling.
But James had a trundle wheel. The English Channel he plumbed. Anyway, I think I'm getting more in tune.
You are, as the show's going on. You've warmed up.
I think I've got a bit of a cold. I think I could probably sing this under normal circumstances.
Have you been having brandy and opium for your consumption?
I am. I'm knocking it back. I'm like Queen Victoria here. I'm off my head. Excuse my French. So, Derek Acora. So, there's a little bit south of here, there's Souter Lighthouse on Lizard Point, South Shields.
You've got a Lizard Point up there as well.
Yes, it's not called Lizard Lighthouse because, of course, there is a Lizard Lighthouse on Lizard Point, Dan South.
Lizard Lighthouse at Lizard Point, yeah.
So, the name had already been taken. It's like equity. This could have been Lizard E Lighthouse. So, Derek Acora, making his TV show back in the early 2000s, went there, and he got in contact with Grace Darling's niece.
Ooh.
Is that you?
No.
It's a TV credit. I'd take it.
I would.
I haven't been on Doctor Who, so.
I'd take it, but it would also be, I'd be very much like Barry Dodds insofar as after any interaction with Derek Acora, it would lead to Derek Acora never wanting to have anything to do with me again. I think Barry Dodds I certainly know he was blocked by almost everyone else on Most Haunted, and I know they got into, I think he was thrown out, I think he's banned from, well, certainly now that Derek Acora is dead, there's no problem with that, but I think for a long while Barry Dodds was actually banned from going and seeing Derek Acora again performing his...
This is the co-host of the Parapod and the Parapod movie out now, I suppose we should say. It's very good. Yeah. I saw it the other day.
Yeah, out now. It's good. Yeah. Really enjoyed it. But yes, I am not Derek Acora's niece. No, I'm not Derek. I'm not Grace Darling's niece. Yeah.
Grace Darling's niece was Isabella Darling, who, to be fair, did live in Souter Lighthouse because... You know that family. They just love lighthouses.
Oh, we're very... I've always wanted a lighthouse, and I never understood why until I discovered the connection.
So Derek Acora allegedly got in contact with Isabella Darling, and this is going to shock the pantaloons off you, James, a man called John.
John.
The Northern Echo said, last night, Barbara Matheson, house manager at the lighthouse, said, I think most people were fairly impressed, especially about the man called John. We knew that was a fact because his son had been in and told us all about him. He had the easiest gig in the world, Derek Acora. He got in contact with a ghost named John and everyone was like, how does he do it? That's amazing. How does he do that? How did he know he was called John? How did he know that someone called John had once lived in a 100-mile radius of here?
Sorry to bring Barry Dodds back into this, but Barry and I and a couple of other people went ghost hunting to East Drive in Pontefract, which is
the famous, currently most haunted house.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, Poltergeist from the 70s, not at all. I think you can see where I'm about to sit on this entire thing, but Barry took us there because he very, very much believes in this sort of stuff. And we parked up, and one of my friends parked up out. Like, a whole bunch of us had parked up and gone in, and we were like, oh, what's going to be like? And I think I ruined it by just being cheerful for the entire evening, which just completely killed the mood. So no one was freaked out by anything ordinary happening in a council house in Pontefract. Ooh. Anyway, right. So there's a woman who lives a couple of doors down who's a medium, only she's not one of these mediums who's learnt how to cold read and is aware that she's a con artist.
Jericho Cora.
Yeah. She's one of these mediums who's accidentally learnt that they can cold read and mistaken it for having genuine psychic powers. She came in and saw me and my girlfriend, and one of the things that she asked was whether either of us had a husband. We are both visibly homosexual.
Yeah, you've got the aura. I mean, that's just straightforward.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, 100%. But on top of that, she came in and she went, right, have any of you got... he's come in. He's telling me that there's... right, I'm getting a voice from the other side. Do any of you know a man called Dave or David? And we all just went, no. Like, statistically, this was already unlikely. And she went, actually, it might not be. It might be John. Does any of you know a John? No. Ian? And Barry went, yeah, I know an Ian. All right, okay. And then she ended up talking and spoke to one of my friends who was there, who I won't name.
Was it Dave?
Could have been. And then she went and said to one of my mates, do you work with dogs? And she was like, yeah, I do. Oh, my God. Like, how did she say, yeah, no, it's just he's saying something about that. I can't even remember what it was. But later on, I went off into town to go and get us a takeaway because we'd ordered a takeaway. I was like, I'll go and get it. You stay here and terrify the shit out of each other and I'll come back and then I'll ruin your evening. When I got back from the takeaway, all the way up, I was going, that was like all of the stuff that she asked, any of the stuff that she did manage to intuit. Like, I could see exactly how she'd done it. But it was just the one thing about my friend working with dogs. And I was like, I honestly don't know how she got to that. And as I came back and parked up, I realized that my mate had gone and parked her works van outside this woman's kitchen, right in front of where she would have been doing her washing up, with a big picture of her on the side of it with two dogs. It's wonderful. Yeah.
So if that isn't proof enough of the supernatural, James, I've got one. Because I know you'll have noticed this is mostly a true story with no ghosts in it. The Farne Islands, demons used to live there. The end.
Oh. Obviously demons used to live there.
Tiny little demons. Supposedly, I can't source this, the model for the door knocker at Durham Cathedral.
Oh, really?
Is it Boggles and Boggarts all up that way?
I think these are straightforward demons because they were driven out by St. Cuthbert.
Right, okay.
I don't know why I said that so weirdly, because one of the versions of it puts an extra H in before the T and I didn't know how to pronounce Cuthbert.
Cuthbert.
St. Cuthbert.
St. Cuthbert.
Cuthbert. Yeah.
St. Cuthbert drove out the demons that used to live on the Farne Islands, and they went around clad in black cowls. They were very small, and they rode goats, and they had little lances, and they were very warlike, and they would attack people. And the only way to keep them back was either by a sign of the cross or by erecting a sort of fence made up of crosses to keep them back. But St. Cuthbert came in, and he just sainted the lot of them.
Yeah.
And they had to go and live slightly on a slightly different island, slightly further away. So that, James, is the legend of Grace Darling.
Well... That is a legendary tale.
Yes. I mean, it happened. And this, she's a legend. She instantly became a national hero. Pretty legendary.
That is pretty cool. I'm ready to score you.
You ready to score it?
Yeah. You ready to be scored?
It's out of five, isn't it?
There's no half points in this game.
Right, okay.
No, we don't do half points. We're not Chortle.
Do it out of 10.
Ridiculous. Just do it out of 10.
Mm. Yeah. Mm.
So the first category that Bethany and I have for you, James, is names.
All right.
Need I reintroduce you to Mr. Sillyman?
Captain Smashing.
Limping Joe. Harlequin Dick. Bilkamall. That's just, he just hit the keys on the typewriter.
That's kind of the way that my Swedish mother-in-law pronounces guacamole, because she's only ever seen it written down. Guacamole?
I think it's not fair. I was going to say, I don't think it's fair that it's guacamole, but then it's chipotle. But it's not Chipotle,
It's not Chipotle.
And that's the same. That is following the same rule.
Yes.
So I'm in the wrong on this one.
Yeah, you are.
Yes, you are.
For once.
You are. So names, obviously, five.
Five out of five for names there.
Yeah.
Her name was Grace Darling. You couldn't have asked for a better name for the goodie in the story.
Yeah.
That is...
Grace Darling.
The nicest name.
It is.
What was the boat called?
The Forfarshire.
The boat was called the Forfarshire. Ah!
Forfarshire. Yes. Forfarshire, who's left their Lego out?
It's an ancient Klingon curse.
Well... It's got to be a five.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mainly for the novelization, just cramming in silly names.
Mr. and all of those things. Yes, Mr. came aboard the ship.
We're going to have to bleep that. And I just love people imagining what it was you said.
Are you going to bleep all of it or just half?
Just everything that I said. Splurt isn't a swear.
You can say splurt.
Yeah, if anything, the bleep is going to make it even ruder. That's the thing.
Problem with the bleep. The bleep is always getting us like that. That's a five out of five for names. Thank you, James. No more than we deserved. Next category. I've made an effort. Supernatural.
I don't think you did make an effort.
An island full of demons, James. I'm sorry.
P.S. There's an island full of demons that ride around on goats.
Yeah, it's this island, the island they live on, full of demons.
Yeah, their island was full of demons. It used to be full of demons.
It was full of demons.
That's the demons that went and lured them onto the rocks.
Yes. Little sirens. Sexy demons.
Yeah, little northeast.
Do they sing like you, Alistair?
Sirens, yeah.
Little Geordie sirens. Yeah, like,
Oh, that'd be why that they crashed on the other island.
The demons, if you can imagine the cast of Geordie Shore just sat there.
On goats.
On the edge of the island, going, "Oh, here, man, come over here."
And the cast of Geordie Shore are repelled by the sign of the cross, so it works.
They are, yeah.
Mm. I mean, that's the only bit of vaguely spookiness, and they're not very scary because...
Derek Acora got in contact with her niece.
Derek Acora does not count as supernatural.
Lighthouse is a supernatural anyway.
Yeah, what's spookier than a lighthouse?
People who live in lighthouses.
Yeah.
Famous saying. It's a famous saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, how did she know that there were people on the rocks?
Oh, yeah.
It was over a mile away,
James. Over a mile away in a storm.
And a big ship crashed into some rocks. And it's literally a job to know about such things.
How on earth could she be expected to know? Mm.
Explain that, James.
Mm. Yeah, you can't. Science. Oh, hang on. Spooky supernatural. Not science. Yeah, not science.
The problem is we're both sceptics and we're really undermining our own argument that any of this is supernatural.
You're doing it in a sarcastic tone of voice.
Yes.
Yeah, we've really hoist ourselves with our own petard here.
I hate it when that happens.
Mm. Sirs petard. Don't bring your petard to a debate.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why I do. I don't know why I do now.
Stop bringing your petard to a knife fight.
I mean, to be fair, it would be great in a knife fight, a petard. You wouldn't have to get close to them. You just light it, throw it at them, and run off.
Genuine villainy in your laughter. Mm. I love that.
Yeah.
What's your score for Supernatural, James?
Two.
Oh, come on.
Even you don't even buy it. I like that they're little, like the fox in Labyrinth riding around on goats.
I don't think there's even goats on this island now, but still.
Yeah, there aren't even goats. Like, goats aren't even, like, indigenous. And also lizards. How are you going to get lizards that far north? Three. And I'll stop pestering you.
Is the Lancashire street market haggling working on you there, James?
You get one for your miniature island demons and one
for the island full of demons.
Psychic that was supernaturally bad at guessing men's names.
All right. Two. Fair enough. Next category, lighthouses.
Oh, well.
There were five of them.
There were five lighthouses.
Because I deliberately included five lighthouses in the story, James, because I've played this game before.
There are five lighthouses in the area.
There's five lighthouses.
Wait,
there's more now. There's even more than five. We've got Hough Hill, we've got Guile Point, we've got Inner Farn Lighthouse, Longstone Lighthouse, and Souter Lighthouse on Lizard Point.
Souter.
That's five lighthouses.
Ah, it's five out of five for lighthouses.
Final category, heroine. Because we've got Grace Darling, a great heroine. We've got...
She is a great heroine.
Queen Victoria.
Off her, not on heroine.
On heroine. Whatever she could
and
get
Grace,
a hold of.
Probably.
And Grace.
Yeah, because obviously, you know, opium, I mean, heroin wasn't invented by Bayer until much later than that, but same principle.
Yeah, it's all basically the same.
The basic ingredients, yeah.
We've got our own heroine in Beth, an actual blood relative.
Yeah.
Blood James.
Our very own heroine.
Blood.
In Doctor Who... Did you play a heroine?
No. Yeah, I did.
Or were you a
baddie?
Definitely a goodie, yes.
I gave my life to save someone else.
So noble.
That's another heroine.
Because I had an English heart. absolutely. I mean, I'm not calling myself a heroine, but that's for other people.
Like Russell T. Davis, for example.
Yeah. Or any of those. Any of those people who helped me to achieve some of the firsts that I've done to make history. I'm just a really difficult pub quiz question. That's the problem.
Well, I think it would be.
Bearing in mind, if it's any less than five, I'm going to be personally insulted.
Yeah, it's not just you. It's also your family.
yeah, absolutely.
And I'm trying to say they're not complete heroines.
Yeah.
Apart from the other person that's also related to her, who is famously cowardly,
Grace
the
Dine's
father
dead.
In this tale.
That bit isn't true, though.
Presumably you're as related to him as you are to her.
Her sister Thomasina wrote a book explaining the truth, and then what happened was nobody bought it because it was really boring.
How many silly names did she have in the first chapter?
Absolutely none.
None.
Apart from Thomasina, yeah. Which is ridiculous. Frankly, I should have mentioned it earlier, but we were already absolutely replete with names, so I didn't bother.
Okay. Well, yes, it is a five.
Yes!
Of course, it's a full house for heroines.
Thank you.
We won.
No, so it's a really good score.
Hey, it's not a competition.
Isn't it?
No.
Why do we have a scoring section?
Why do we score?
I don't know. No one knows.
Bethany.
Yes.
Assuming that a few people who are listening to this are not familiar with your back catalogue and Twitch output and everything else, mm-hmm. Where can people find you?
Well, every day at 2 p.m. I do a show called A Brew and a Chat over on Twitch, which you can find by searching for Bethany Black. If you put Bethany Black in, it will show you who I am. I'm also on Twitter far more than I should be, probably. all of these places, all of the usual socials. And if you search for my name, I'm usually the first one that pops up. And I'm the first one that pops up in Google, so, you know. In your face, the comic book character with the same name and the other actor who went and managed to steal my name from Spotlight, the actor's online thing.
Bethany E. Black. Wow. A brew in a chat, by the way, Americans. A brew there is a cup of tea. This is not a sort of witchy cauldron situation.
Yeah, nor is it like alcohol, because I do have a lot of Americans who tune in spite of the fact that it's on incredibly early in the morning for some of them. I have viewers as far afield as Sydney in one direction and Anchorage, Alaska in the other, who regularly pop in.
You have the person from Anchorage, Alaska listening to your show. Wow.
I have the one trans person in Anchorage, Alaska who's gone, oh, brilliant. Finally, some representation. I was a series baddie in No Offence, which is now currently on Disney Plus in the UK.
Mm. Oh, didn't mention that during the heroine section, but okay. Your Twitter handle, I'm trying to remember. I think it's Bethany Black, isn't it?
Bethany Black, yeah. But because if you just type in Bethany Black, it finds me. There isn't anyone pretending to be me. I've scared them all off.
You've been listening to Lawmen with me, Alistair Beckett King,
and me, James Shakeshaft,
with our guest, Bethany Black.
Yes, and there is all sorts of extras from this episode on the Patreon, and extra episodes with loads of our guests, including your Robin Inces, your Forrest Burgesses, your members of the Delightful Sausages, your Miranda Merricks, your Stuart Goldsmiths, and some ill-fated solo episodes of Just Us, e.g. Ride Along with the Law Boys.
That's patreon.com/lawmenpod.
That's right.
All right, the credits music is finished, James. It's time for corrections.
I think this is only because we're ill that we have to do this.
Yeah, we were quite ill there.
I missed an opportunity for an excellent joke again.
What?
I know this keeps happening. If only there was a French phrase to encapsulate it. I'll probably remember that later.
Very good. Yeah.
Mm. When we're talking about lighthouses and we sort of, you can hear us casting around for a good joke. But I think it just peters out. I say people in lighthouses shouldn't.
Yeah.
And then in the edit, it came to me. People in lighthouses shouldn't throw shade.
Very good. Oh.
Because it's like the other phrase, it's very similar. Afterwards, you think, oh, no, yeah, that does work, actually.
That is the last thing you would want a lighthouse to do.
Textbook example of my painted tid. clever dick comedy.
That's a direct quote from a review.
A reviewer on the internet. I'm now surrounded by the children. They've come for me.
The children have just silently approached you like little ghosts.
Hello, boys.
They've come for you.
We're going to have pizza, all right? Okay, they're making an imaginary pizza. I better make them some real pizza.
Right, you better get on. Oh, sorry, I need one thing from you before you go. It's 5 out of 5 for Lysa, as is. All right, shh, or something like that.
Okay, boys, can you be quiet for silent? Count to 5 in your heads, and then you can make a noise, okay? Ah, it's 5 out of 5 for lighthouses.
I think we got that. That sounds like out loud counting.
In your head, you silly sausage.
If I can hear it, it's not in anyone's head.
5 out of 5 for... Well, you started counting again, didn't you?
I think we've got it. Right.
Yeah, I'll send it now. 5 out of 5 for lighthouses.
All right. What a quality pickup.